Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, NRG, Christus Health, and BP.
Please join me in welcoming Lance Armstrong.
Good to see you. Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming in. Okay. Thank
you. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
It works.
Yep. Mic works. You're dressed just fine.
I was a little underdressed, I felt.
You were? Matthew Dowd wore jeans, so actually you're fine compared to him. It's okay, actually. I want to spend the bulk of our time talking about cancer and talking about smoke-free, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the doping investigation that is going on now. Obviously, you're welcome to say what you choose to or don't choose to on that, but I think people are wondering, this has been going on now for months into years. What's going on with that?
Well, yours is right. I mean, obviously, for me, maybe not obviously, but it started a long time ago. It started 10 years ago with a lot of talk and speculation, which is, you know, I think is part and parcel to being successful in what is widely viewed as, maybe a dirty sport. But we see in sports, you see these spectacular performances. You have a guy run 2:03 in Boston last weekend. I mean, that's the fastest time that's ever been run in the marathon. I read that article and I think, I wonder what the press conference after the race is like. Do they ask the guy, what about this, what about that, and question a superhuman performance? And you can look at it with a lot of different examples and athletes, and if it's Phelps or if it's Federer, or a lot of guys that just have done stuff that has never been done before.
And you think there's a culture of doubt that comes around that?
Oh, I think there's a culture of doubt in our society in general. I think the media drives a lot of that. I think, as you probably well know, and people in this room are sharp enough to know that it's a competitive business too. And so everybody's trying to sort of scoop the next person. And the media, the base of the media has become broader and broader. As you just said, if you're here with your phone on and you're tweeting, et cetera, you are basically acting as a journalist.
You're the media.
You're broadcasting your perspective and your view of this conversation. So in the old days, it started, and I haven't answered your question yet. I want to get back to it, but sorry. In the old days, it started as an AM radio, and then it expanded, and then we had TV, and then you had three TV channels, then you had cable TV, then you had the internet and blogs and Twitter, Facebook, camera phones. Everybody's reporting on everything, and so even the mainstream media, and with regards to myself, there's always the talk. Well. There's this investigation. Will there be an indictment? Will there be all these things? The truth of the matter is that I've been indicted in the media. The media reports on these things.
There's been no official sanction, no official indictment of you of any kind.
Absolutely not.
Resulting from any of this stuff.
No. And it's been going on for a long time. So,
have you even been identified officially as a target of an investigation? Don't you get it? I watched enough nighttime television to know you're supposed to get a target letter, aren't you, if you're a target of an investigation?
Correct. No, and I have not.
You've
have
never
not.
Received a target letter?
No.
So this investigation is just basically one that we're aware of and that we hear things about or read things about, but there's been no official target letter that you're
receiving. Right, and we read a lot about it. And I think people ask fair questions. They say, they'll ask, why is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, investigating the Tour de France, or the alleged misconduct at the Tour de France, which is obviously in France, 10 years ago?
The F in FDA doesn't stand for France, I think, right?
No, it doesn't. No, but so there are those questions. They are now being asked, and I think that people have not been given the answers to that, but they're waiting on the answers. The other troubling thing too is, and again to tie the media into it, not to blame anybody, has been, at least in my situation, has been the leaks, the issue of the leaks.
Who's leaking?
Well, see, look at that person. Didn't pay attention.
That person
very well.
Is leaking.
Look at that.
Stop leaking.
Who is that?
Yeah. Hope it's nobody with a yellow
Barb,
band.
Is that you?
No, he's just gone to the bathroom. It's fine, actually. Who's leaking? Seriously, who's?
We know. I think we know who's leaking, but I'm not. I mean, you guys know who's leaking, but it wouldn't be right for me to say right now because obviously we don't know for sure. But anyways, it's with those leaks leads to the indictment in the press, which then leads to the indictment in the minds. And in the space of the people.
Yeah.
And so that's the troubling thing. But that's the society we live in now.
And that's the status of things right now. It's ongoing. No indictment. No target letter.
No.
Having said
all that, I'm going to repeat what I always say. I'm not going to let it distract me.
Well, and I want to transition from this to that because it would be easy for it to distract anybody. And the reality is your name is on the building over there on East 6th Street, the foundation that we said $400 million since 97. You have gone out to California to lobby for a tax increase recently to fund billions of dollars of cancer research out there, a tax increase on cigarettes.
I was going to say, do we have to say tax increase? Just you
well,
can't
that's
leave
what it
like
is,
that.
Though, right? I mean, it is.
Well,
it's on cigarettes.
There's a slight increase in a pack of cigarettes.
But the point is, you've done the work you have, but that's a tax increase. A slight increase is still an increase. And that's fine. And it's defensible if you choose to defend it. The point is that you have used your celebrity over the years, a considerable celebrity, on the foundation's front, on some of these other fronts. And the question is, to what degree does all the stuff we've been talking about impact your ability to do that?
Okay, so there's a couple ways to look at that. I can look at it. If you want to just consider it as the brand, as the package, you can look at it with regards to the foundation. So that could be how much money we've raised in 2010 versus 2009 when there was none of this talk. And then we could also compare the first 3 months of 2011. I can look at it as an athlete and say, okay, has Nike called me and had questions? Has Anheuser-Busch called and had questions? Has all these people called?
Dropping you as an endorser.
Correct, which has not happened. Not even been a call to question, which has been amazing for me, for them to show that kind of support. With regards to the foundation, we haven't seen anything in terms of a negative impact.
No fall off in fundraising?
No. And I don't want to... misquote, but I believe, I know that 2010 was much bigger than 2009. We raised about $50 million. 2011, the first 3 months, were up about 20% over 2010. And this comes at a time when most nonprofits, as you well know, and most of you probably well know, are not doing well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are large organizations that are losing millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in funding because of the economy, because of people's willingness to give or not give. There's a lot of stuff going on besides what might be written in the press or might be speculated.
But no impact.
But no impact so far. I mean, we're very fortunate for that. We have obviously a loyal fan base and group of supporters. And I think they recognize that we're doing important work. And they recognize that this is a complicated disease. It's going to take time. And they've been amazing supporters, not just here in Austin, but all over the world.
Around the world. Yeah. Let's talk about that and the view of the work that's being done. And let's focus on CPRIT, the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas, specifically. On April 3rd, or the second of the 2 days of the budget debate, I was watching the stream on our site, actually, and I saw Representative Rob Orr from Burleson get up to try to pass an amendment that would have, as he originally put it, basically defund, at least for this year, for this biennium, the funding that would have gone to CPRIT to, I think it was $300 million was the number.
300 a year.
$300 million was the number at issue. And the reason was that our budget problems in Texas are so great, we really can't afford to be spending money on this stuff now. It was pointed out to Representative Orr that, in fact, the money that goes in comes back out in much larger numbers in the form of all the work that gets done. That amendment was voted down, one of the rare amendments to the budget put up by a Republican that was voted down during those 2 days. Can you make a defense for the work that is being done over there? Obviously, you didn't have to defend it in that case, but I think people wonder, because this passed in 07, we haven't heard an enormous amount, but there has been a lot of work going on behind the scenes.
Well, I think there's, first of all, the people of Texas overwhelmingly voted to support it. And when Orr tried to make that change, the legislature also overwhelmingly supported it. So that was a great vote of confidence for us.
Well, in fact, that money, so we're clear, that money is not actually in the state budget, right? They're bonds. It's not
correct.
It wouldn't have been a $300 million benefit back to the state of Texas if we had cut that money.
No, but you say benefit. There's a tremendous benefit when you consider all of the hospitals, all the doctors, all the research, in terms of the economy itself and the way this drives the economy, whether it's a local one or a state one, the ability for us to bring in top-level researchers to be in this state and do critical work. You know, the only unfortunate thing with CPRIT is that, yes, we have to review this every 2 years. So this was an issue a month ago, and it'll be another issue in two years,
I suspect. Because they have to basically say grace over the work that you're doing in order for the process to get, you know, what I have heard is,
that
tell me
if... the last minute.
It happened at the last minute?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
The amendment to put us in this position, but a few years ago when we were campaigning for Prop 15, but... I think that, again, there's tons of examples out there of the benefit that this has done. I mean, you could just look at the disease in general with regards to how it affects the lives of Texans, and you could say that's worthy. But then you can also dig deeper and you can look at the way it does drive the economy here in the state, with the way that certainly the potential for us to develop life-saving cures is is those are all worthy things.
I think the real numbers that I've heard are there's a $14.5 million debt service obligation that the state does have budgetarily over a biennium, but that the economic value or impact of that expenditure is something like $600 million back, and then they do a multiplier, and it's basically $1.8 million is the real impact. And so the question becomes,
you're hired.
Is the 14.5, I'm hired by whom? Not by Representative Orr, I suppose. Is the $14.5 million a sufficient amount to put in to get out that? Yeah. That ends up being the question.
Yeah, and we've had, and again, I mean, I'd like to thank people from both sides of the aisle, you know, just up the street here.
Well, it was a bipartisan vote to not
get amazing support.
So what can you be more specific about the kind of work that CPRIT is doing over these years? Because again, I think a lot of publicity around the time that the referendum was on the ballot, not an enormous amount of detail level publicity for the mass audience about exactly what the Institute is doing.
Well, it's very hard to say for me as a lay person or simply as a cancer survivor. Obviously, I know the disease a little more than most people, but this is a very complicated disease, and we will cure all of these little issues, or big issues when it affects the people, the lives of certain people. We'll cure them all differently, and so the work that's being done there is obviously way beyond us on a scientific level, but. You know, we have to remind people that cancer is one word, but literally consists of 500 or hundreds and hundreds of different types of diseases. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sit here today, 14 or 15 years on, and I've got five kids, and I won the Tour de France 7 times, and no matter what anybody says, I won it 7 times. done a lot of things. Meanwhile, you pick up the paper 2 days ago, and Greta Bates, who wins the New York City Marathon 9 times, dies at 57 from breast cancer. Completely different diseases. People look at that and they say, wait a minute.
They lump all cancer together.
Yeah, if we fix 10, why can't we fix her?
Right.
And she probably said that at some point, too.
Right.
So we have to stay realistic that this is not a single issue. It's a very complicated disease.
And so to that end, the money goes to different places, right? So as I understand it, it goes to academic institutions, it goes to for-profit companies, it goes to foundations. The money goes out to various places to fund research, to attract research capabilities. It's got a variety of purposes.
And we have an amazing base here in Texas. If you look at our medical system and you look at the research facilities, if it's MD Anderson, UT Southwestern, Baylor, across the state.
And they're all recipients of this funding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And they deserve it.
Yeah.
And at a time, because we just, speaking of another budget issue, at a time when federally we're being cut.
Yeah,
I mean, in the new budget, we lost at the National Cancer Institute lost $45 or $50 million.
Yeah,
at a time when the disease continues, it doesn't care. It continues to tick off and take 1,500 Americans every day.
Right.
So,
well, as you've pointed out, 2 days of cancer deaths equal the World Trade Center.
Right.
Deal. Yeah. Right. That's the magnitude of the loss.
So the states, right. I think, and I guess we'll talk about California at some point, the states have to be creative and strategic.
And replace some of the funding lost at the federal level.
And not just replace it, but...
Well, in fact, you went to Washington not long ago, a few weeks ago, to lobby against the cuts, right?
Right.
You a lobby is probably in this case in quotes, but you went to urge lawmakers of both parties to reinstate some of the funding.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Republican proposal, as I understand it, does more in the way of cutting funding for this stuff than the president's proposal going forward or the Democratic proposal going forward?
You said that.
It's a fact. I'm not taking a position that it's good or bad. I'm simply asking, as I understand the facts, the work that you did was largely to try to hold off some of the stuff on the Republican side.
Exactly. Right. Not just at the NCI, but at the NIH.
But National Institute of Health got a pretty significant cut as well, as I understand.
$225 million, I think.
Right. And again, that stuff rolls downstream in your mind in that if it gets cut there, the states have to step up to replace in some fashion
They don't have to, but they certainly have the choice to, and you have to look for creative ways to do that.
Right.
And we didn't know that we would be in this budget position now when we were dreaming up and campaigning for Proposition 15. But for example, in California, they now know that.
Yeah.
They know what they can do. Again, another place where there's a tremendous base of support, a tremendous base of medical researchers and very intelligent people that all they need are the tools. They need the funding, they need the tools, they need the support. We know what to do.
Right.
We just simply need to go out and do it.
Let me ask you a question that has come up a lot in the last few months, both federally and at the state level. Why does the government have to do everything? Why does the government have to pay for everything? I mean, a lot of people will say, and in fact, we published a story on the Tribune a few weeks ago about whether at a time of budget problems we can afford to be putting money into things like cancer research. And Talmadge Heflin, who's a Republican, former House Appropriations Committee chair, now at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, said, look, private industry, private companies, private sources of this funding need to step up to replace this. Right. Government can't do everything. It can't all be public funds. What do you say about that?
That's a complicated issue. I mean, we've always done it. So we've gotten into this place where we funded the NCI. Richard Nixon declared war on cancer in 1971. He created the National Cancer Institute.
Yeah.
Gave it $150 million. And then it grew over time, and you know it's plateaued and it's come down obviously this year. But
federal government wasn't trillions and upon trillions of dollars in the wrong direction at that time.
Right.
And the state of Texas wasn't $27 billion in the hole at that time. So the question is, are circumstances different, and therefore the approach should be different?
Well, I think it should be different. The disease is not going away. In fact, it's increasing. Try to predict a little bit of the future. If you look at the demographics of this country, you see that in a few years this will obviously be an aging population. You have a younger population that is not as active, that is heavier than it ever was. If you combine those two, overlay that with the medical or the healthcare system, it's a perfect storm. So if we don't do something to try to prevent that, and again, prevent is a great word. Prevention is an even better word. We're in real trouble. So I think there's a place for that. Obviously, there's also a place for big pharma and private business.
You don't resist the inclusion of those guys or the invitation of those guys to the table from a funding standpoint?
Of course not. But I would also, I mean, I think the key there, and most would tell you, the key is collaboration. Let's not repeat bad science. If we know something doesn't work, let's share those results and let's move on.
How is your relationship with a big pharma? How is your relationship with the private companies as far as that goes? Are you actively lobbying them to put money in?
Not necessarily, but I think it's good.
Yeah.
The relationship. Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you about smoke-free. I want to move over to that because that's obviously a very present issue at the session.
Yeah.
I went and looked online last night. I think it's House Bill 670 is the big smoke-free bill. It looks to have quite a lot of support, bipartisan support.
More than ever, yeah.
Bipartisan support. And I know that the number that's quoted often is 404 $1 million of impact over a biennium in terms of healthcare costs and wages that would be lost otherwise, that this actually does have. They can tie real savings and a real injection of economic benefit to the passage of this. I went online to look for the opposite.
And the effect it has on local business.
And
too.
The effect it has on business.
Yeah, because it's
I want to come to the positive effects in a second, but I went online trying to find the negative case for smoke-free.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time online looking, and except for a few pictures of Hitler with a cigarette, accusing you all of being smoke Nazis.
Is that why Hitler was trending on Twitter yesterday?
That may. Hitler was his birthday yesterday.
I did not know that.
I will simply say I did know that.
It was trending. I'm like, why is Adolf Hitler trending today?
That's why.
Because it was his birthday.
It wasn't about smoke-free, though. But truly, if you go look for the opposition to smoke-free, what you find are lots of pictures of Hitler with cigarettes accusing you all of being smoke Nazis. But I can't find the substantive case against it. And I really want to know what it may be, but I'm not finding a lot of it, which gives me sense that maybe this is likely to pass.
You were on the wrong website.
You
should have been on the Altria website.
Is it largely the cigarette companies? They don't even seem to be putting up too much of a fight, actually, at least not easily found on the internet.
They're smart. They're very smart, and they have deep pockets.
What is their argument, as best you can say it with a straight face?
We can use both of them. I'm not quite sure what their argument here in Texas would be, that it's people's rights. It should be their rights to choose if they smoke or not smoke, and they smoke whenever they want, inside, yeah. Outside, around people that are working, around children. They'll say that you shouldn't step on our rights.
Mm-hmm. Are you not sympathetic to that? I mean, you're someone who's felt maybe not treated as fairly by the government over time as you might have been, and people will say, look, the government shouldn't be in my business. Government shouldn't be telling me where I can smoke and where I can't smoke.
I agree. But when you are jeopardizing the lives and the health of other people around you, you then lose your rights. It's like saying, well, there's a school zone, okay, it's 20 miles an hour, but I'm late, I want to drive 50, and I want to be on my phone. It's my right, I can do whatever I want.
Right.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
There's a speed zone there in the school zone, and it's 20 because we're trying to protect our children that are walking to and from school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the same argument. You can't make that argument. You'll never win that one.
Yeah.
I think we're safe there. Then obviously, in California, they'll say that they'll push the no tax campaign. or the anti-tax campaign. Or,
but let's come to California in a second. I want to stay in Texas because there's no effort being made to increase taxes in order to pay for a smoke-free workplace.
No.
So the issue is disengaged from the tax question, at least here.
Yeah.
Here it's simply, do we think this is a good idea or not a good idea? And it, again, it looks like quite a lot of people in legislature, both parties seem to be supporting it.
Of course.
And so you're hopeful at this point of it
passing. Evan, it's not an issue of if, is this a good idea or not. It's not an issue of if this will ever pass, because it will pass. It's only a question of when.
Right.
And so this is the most momentum we've had. We've tried a few times, and obviously they've been trying for quite some time. We've been involved the last few attempts. This is the best chance we have so far.
And what is precisely at issue here is indoor workplace smoking.
Correct.
Ban.
Yeah.
Limited to workplace.
Yeah, and look at the places around the world that are smoke-free, okay? Dublin, Ireland, Paris, France, all of Germany. I mean, Paris, France, really smoke-free? I mean, if anybody's been to Paris and been to a bistro or a bar, I mean, everybody's smoking. And so if they can do it, right. And why the hell can't we do it?
Yeah. Well, you alluded to the question of how this affects business. I'm sure you're sympathetic to the fact that a lot of businesses say, wait a minute, if you impose this ban on Texas, then we're going to lose our business businesses.
If it's statewide, I totally disagree. We campaigned for this in Wisconsin a few years ago, and people made the argument that there were certain cities or counties that were smoke-free and certain ones that weren't. So if they were literally across the street, I mean, obviously all the smokers would walk across the street to the, you know, across the county line or the city line where they could smoke or hang out in that particular bar, that would affect. But if everybody is consistent and has the same rules, it's absolutely beneficial. Those numbers are out there. It's very hard to debate the economic impact. People want, the majority of people don't smoke. And not to not, I mean, if somebody chooses to smoke, that doesn't mean that they're Adolf Hitler. That doesn't mean they're a bad person. That means they're addicted to cigarettes.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's unfortunate, but doesn't mean you're a bad person.
But it doesn't surprise you. I mean, when there was a discussion of a smoking ban in clubs here in Austin, you know, the club owners all just rose up in arms over this. This is, you're just impacting our ability to do business, to make money. It's not fair.
I think now, if you look back on it, they'll tell you that it was good for their business.
It's a great, and there's a greater good argument to be made, but there's also ultimately it ended up not affecting their businesses the way that they thought.
I don't see a lot of negative points there.
Is there any? I'm going to sound like you're a state legislator. Is there a fiscal note attached to this? Is there any cost associated with the implementation of this, whatever the benefits are?
Dave Lofi? Where's Dave Lofi?
There's probably somebody here who could answer, but you don't know whether there are costs associated with this. And if there were costs associated with the implementation of it, you would still make the argument that it's worth spending the money now because the benefit later is
absolutely
greater. Okay, well, what about the California?
Absolutely, there's a tremendous benefit.
Let's talk about the California thing. So you went out a couple months ago to lobby in California for the passage of a tax increase, which you say is not that significant, but tell us how large the tax increase is.
It's a dollar a pack.
Dollar a pack.
Which translates to $600 million a year in research funding in the state of California.
How much a pack of cigarettes costs these days? I quit too long ago to know that firsthand.
I should know.
$7.
So
that's right. I saw you smoking out front when we walked up. So you would know. I was looking for you. I'm like, where is she?
Don't worry, you won't be on camera. But you know, a dollar a pack increase.
I'm sorry.
Dollar.
Is it $7?
Now you've busted two people publicly.
I actually wish that it was cheaper to get, you know, off of it. The nicotine is really expensive, and it's hard to keep up with. So.
Well, but if you think about it, a dollar a pack on a $7 pack of cigarettes. You know, that's 13-14%. I mean, that's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
It's not a small increase for the person who's paying it. It's actually pretty significant.
Right. And so so Big Tobacco would tell you, or tell the people of California, you know, these guys are going to come in here and tax the hell out of you, and this isn't fair. The reality is that every state has a tobacco tax. Yeah. California today is 33rd in the country.
Right.
If we add a dollar, or if they add a dollar, it takes them to 15th. So the impression there is that, oh my God, we're the most heavily taxed state in the union, and now this is even more ridiculous. It's not. I think it's pretty much in line with the industry or the national standard, and the benefit there. I never thought we could do anything that would generate more revenue and more investment in cancer research than Prop 15.
This would actually double it.
It would double. Yeah.
$600 million a year.
Yeah.
So where does that stand right now? What's the process?
Well,
that's
it's been pushed off. It's and again, there all these, you know, as you well know, these our states function differently, and the government functions differently. So we were looking at something on the June ballot That's not going to happen. Looks like it's going to be next summer. So we got a little bit of time. That'll be a hard one. That will be much harder than Prop 15 or
well, it's probably easier to pass a tax increase in California than in Texas.
But big tobacco will spend, if they have to, they'll spend $100 million.
Will you have the support of the
governor?
Think about it
if you're a 12 or 13-year-old kid and you're, you know, I mean, you and I said, I know for you, a buck is absolutely nothing.
Oh, yeah, huge. Journalism is hugely high-paid. Non-profit especially. Right.
But say you're a young kid and, I mean, every dollar, you're scrambling to get coins and a bill here and a bill there, and you know that extra buck actually makes it that much harder.
It's a deterrent, you think?
Absolutely,
for younger people.
Yeah,
right, yeah. So the governor and other leaders in the state government there are for you, against you on that? What?
For.
Yeah. So you're hopeful that maybe this, if not now, then soon, that'll happen.
I think. Yeah, I'm hopeful. It's we're not exactly sure when, but it'll take some work. It takes. I mean, again, they will invest a lot of dough. Yeah. To tell a different story. So we've got to be there with the proper partners,
yeah,
whether it's us or other NGOs or the research facilities in California or the leaders of that state to tell our story.
Did you contemplate coming back to Texas during this session or a future session and trying to get a tax? I mean, is there any chance at all that you could make the argument for a tax increase here to fund, whether it's smoke-free or to fund cancer prevention, research treatment, any of that stuff?
I didn't consider that.
Because?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Do you feel like that with Prop 15, you're pretty much done coming to...
I do, and I think the combo of separate and smoke-free, I mean, I don't think you can have one without the other. I think they both, you know, they're perfect partners. But I think we're in a good place.
Yeah. How does the discussion of, because, you know, this is a budget in which a lot of things are being cut, public ed, higher ed, necessarily, and also health care. And at the federal level, there's obviously a big fight going on over health care reform. Where does the work that you do on cancer prevention and research, or smoke-free or anything, fit into this conversation about funding for health care at the state level or the battle over health care reform at the federal level?
Right. But the big thing for us, we supported the health care reform, and we supported it as a body of cancer survivors. So,
right.
So the issue of pre-existing conditions, the issue of our children, the issue of just making sure. This is, if you're diagnosed, it depends a little bit on the type of cancer that you're diagnosed with, but tremendously expensive. Very expensive. And so a lot of people just simply can't afford any care at all. And so we supported it from that standpoint. Obviously, it was a very hot topic. It was very controversial. It still is today. I mean, many people will tell you it doesn't matter how great an idea it is. We can't afford it. I mean, we all have great ideas. I have a lot of great ideas, too. But if I can't afford them, then that's a problem. But it had tremendous benefit on the lives of people that were either had been diagnosed before, and you know, I could be in that position. You know, 15 years ago, people could look at me and say, I don't know. I mean, there's a risk that you either are re-diagnosed or relapse,
mm-hmm,
or you have a secondary cancer, or you have some sort of problem later on in your life that we don't want to pay for at some point.
So. Yeah. Have you ever done that, sat down and estimated the cost of the treatment that you received over time?
I never did. Although it was, it gets to be very expensive when you consider things like bone marrow transplant and extended hospital stays.
Right.
Mine was perhaps a little more expensive because I stayed in as an inpatient based on the treatment protocol that I received.
Yeah. Not everybody has the benefit of being able to design their own treatment plan. But from a financial standpoint, there are limitations on what some people can actually afford to.
Well, again, those extended hospital stays, I mean, most people are treated as an outpatient.
Yeah.
Typically, a kid in my case, a 25-year-old young man, would be treated as an outpatient. But that was the interesting thing about my situation at the time, was standard protocol includes a drug called bleomycin, which is probably one of the most toxic drugs that we have, toxic for the lungs. And it was a simple conversation early on with the doctors in Indiana where I was treated. They said, do you ever want to race again? And I said, well, I guess so, but more than anything, I'd just like to see another day or see another year or be able to have a family, et cetera, et cetera. And they realized that bleomycin would be absolutely devastating to that career potentially. So they took me off bleomycin, put another drug in. The only downside to that was that I had to stay in the hospital to receive, so I was treated probably 3 or 4 hours a day.
Yep.
The other 20 hours, I was constantly being hydrated, so I was always hooked up to that IV pole.
Yeah.
But that simple decision, that discussion that I sat down and had with them, really made everything else possible. If I would have said, I don't know, I don't want to be an inpatient, I want to be treated in Austin, Yeah. I want to just go into the infusion room, and I want to go home. I want to be with my friends and family. Four cycles of Blio, I never would have got on a bike ever again.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
We have just a couple minutes left. What's with your health now? I mean, it's probably none of our business, but since you're here, I'm going to ask. And you're not especially public in talking about the details of this, but I'm frankly very curious to know 14 years, almost 15 years later, how you doing?
Well, I think I'm doing pretty good. I feel good.
Yeah.
I was out at Uchi a little late last night, so I don't feel that great this morning. But
I wasn't referring to that.
Think about it. This is sort of a funny story, but when I was diagnosed in 96, I bank sperm because these high dose treatments are devastating to fertility.
Yep.
And so I had, Kristen and I had the first three kids through IVF and through ICSI, through a fairly complicated way to have children. And then, a couple of years ago, I decided to come back and get on the bike, and that was not the only thing that came back. So now,
I was about to say, I didn't know that you were being euphemistic there. Actually,
yeah.
you meant the literal bike.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I was not. But I was in 2008, 2009. There were two comebacks, and so now Anna and I have two other kids, which is a health related issue. I mean, I think that's pretty amazing that while most people would say never again, it happened, and so I feel great. I exercise every day.
And there are no signs of alarm or trouble when they come back and look at you, as I'm sure they do fairly regularly.
Right. Well, no. If safe to say, I mean, a lot of people would know that if that was the case. It's a very simple blood test.
You want to talk about leaks? There'd be leaks on that.
Right.
I suspect.
Yeah.
Is there any, before we open it up for questions, is there anything that you would like to push legislatively next in the area of cancer or smoke-free or anything else, health, that maybe is the next challenge you're going to take on that you want to give us a little window into?
I don't have anything. I mean, I think we're so busy with the stuff we're doing right now. And I think that they're all very important. I mean, obviously right now, front and center is smoke-free. It'll take all of our time, all of our effort, all of our energy and passion, not just ours, but all of the people involved, all of our partners, amazing partners, whether it's us or ACS or Coleman or tobacco-free kids. I mean, great, great partners, and also great partners in that pink building down there.
So you're not thinking beyond that right now?
No.
Okay, very well. All right, we're out of time. Lance Armstrong, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Questions, okay? Yeah. Any questions? Okay. All right, we'll do questions from the audience. We have a microphone. We'll walk around. If you have a question, put your hand up. We'll walk the microphone over to you, and right here in the front first. Sir.
Good morning, Evan, and good morning, Lance. Lance, I smoked for 35 years, and my private health insurance paid over $100,000 for my open heart surgery with no questions asked, but wouldn't pay a nickel for the prescription medications that finally helped me quit smoking. What's it going to take to change that?
Oh. Well, I mean, she touched on that a second ago, just how expensive Nicorette is or... That's a great question. I don't have the answer to that. It's a complicated, that also is a complicated system, the insurance system, and the way they view certain expenses and justify certain ones and meanwhile don't justify others is astounding. But
is the problem there is the insurance companies?
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, they viewed a $100,000 open heart surgery as no big deal,
right.
Which, probably, not probably, I mean, who knows, could have been part of the result of smoking for 35 years. Obviously, cardiovascular disease is a serious side effect of decades and decades of smoking.
Yeah.
The key there is prevention. I mean, I don't want to get off the true question, but if we can ever prevent that question from being asked, whether it's an open heart surgery or whether it's years worth of Nicorette, then we're in a much better place. I know it's simple to say that right now.
Well, but come back to what we talked about earlier.
When did you start smoking?
Well, how?
15 years old. I mean, if we can intervene in the life of a 15-year-old or a 13-year-old or a 17-year-old today, and I can look at them, and you're going to smoke, you're going to pick up a pack of cigarettes and start smoking or not. I look at that, I say, we just cured that person. We just cured them. That's a cancer cure right there. It's maybe a little speculative, but I view that as a cure.
But why not, though, devote your energy to pressing the insurance companies to pay for more of this stuff? I mean, there is a role for the insurance companies and for insurance coverage to play in prevention in treatment,
we
if not in...
Giving if, away campus.
Well, but let me ask you, seriously, you could, obviously, having leveraged your celebrity on behalf of Cyprit, having leveraged your celebrity on behalf of Smoke Free, you could, frankly, mount a campaign against big insurance to try to get them to play more of a role in this.
Well, I don't know that I'd make a campaign against them. I'd want to work with them. I think you can incentivize people to make better decisions. And you can incentivize them by letting them benefit from their rates or from whatever, give them an economic benefit. That can work at a from a company's perspective with a health and wellness program at the company where you incentivize people to work out, you incentivize them not to smoke, you incentivize them to eat better and control their weight, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of ways to view prevention, and there's a lot of people that will, quite frankly, benefit from that. And it's a little different here in Austin, too, though. I mean, you see these certain cities, you can go around to different communities in America, and they all look and feel vastly different. I mean, this is a very fit city. You go downtown, you look around. I mean, everybody in this room probably does some type of exercise in this town.
And yet there are people in alleys all over downtown sneaking a cigarette. You know, Austin is no different than a lot of other places.
I'm not going to pick on anybody anymore about...
This is the new I love everybody, Lance. This is it. This is no... Not everybody. Not everybody. That's for the after interview conversation, I understand. Other questions around here, please. Hands up over there. And then we'll come over here. Sir.
I just wanted to first thank you for your work with the foundation, Strong. And
you're welcome.
Thank you for being instrumental in helping Cyprit become reality. You see a big perspective nationwide from your organization. Can you elaborate exactly what this has done for Texas on the national scene relative to the other states, what they're doing?
You mean shining a light on the work that Texas is doing in this area? Texas likes to be first and best.
Well, and also how the rest of the country views us, I guess, is what you're saying. I mean, we know we're very fortunate. We have a guy on our board, Dr. Dave Johnson, who was at Vanderbilt, who's one of the most preeminent cancer researchers in the country. He was the chair of ASCO for a year. That's a yearly commitment. An amazing scientist. He moved to Texas. He moved to Dallas, UT Southwestern, because of Cyprit. And he'll tell you that. He'll say, I am leaving a great job, a great position, great pay, great all the great benefits. I'm moving to Texas because of this.
Yep.
This is an amazing initiative. So you hear stories like that, which are national stories because you're poaching people from other places. And that tells you you've done the right thing. It tells you you need to keep doing the right thing as well.
There were some questions over here, Amanda. There might be one in the back. Let's take Mr. Graham and then come forward to Ms. Moorhead, and then we'll go over right here. Mr. Graham.
Thanks for attending this morning and enjoyed the conversation. I thought I heard you say this, but I'd just like to ask it again and make sure I'm clear. I don't know where we are in the budget process for the funding that you're trying to advocate for, but we're faced with a $27 billion shortfall. Why do we need to be doing funding cancer research in Texas?
Well, I tried to answer it. I don't know if I got it. I mean, I look at it. I mean, you can look at it on a very, very high level, looking down at the population, and you see the impact on this disease daily or yearly. It takes a massive toll, not just on the lives of, obviously on the lives of all of us, but specifically here in Texas. And that, to me, means that you have to, any time in our culture or civilization, we face these wars and we invest in wars. Because they're not right. You don't like what you're up against. You feel like you can do this better. This is maybe not a great time to use a war analogy with all the stuff that's going on in the world, but this is a war. This is anything that comes along and just steals people from you, like wars do, you have to try and fix. And I think there's a place for that. I think that it'd be different if we were in another state that didn't have the potential to do that. Okay? Keep in mind, I think this state has a built-in natural potential because of the hospitals and the people we have here. I think you got to give them not just the resources, the financial resources and the infrastructure, but you have to give them the support that they know they're being encouraged to do great work. And it's going to be, Evan and everybody, I mean, it's going to be an interesting time in 10 years when Cyprit finally runs its course. And, you know, I'm going to be the guy that they come to and they say, okay, Armstrong, you know, there's still 1,500 or 1,400 Americans dying, and what the hell did you do with $3 billion? I'll be the guy that they come ask, and so I have to be prepared. And I knew that when I campaigned for it, but that's why you have these partners, and you and then when they come to blame you, you say, let's talk to the partners, okay? But I fully understand that it's a serious commitment, and with that comes serious expectations. And nobody wants this to end more than I do. You know, for myself, for my friends, for my family, for my children, for my organization.
And in point of fact, this was an expenditure that was put before the public, right? It was put on the ballot.
Absolutely.
And the public said, given the choice between supporting it or not supporting it, good times or bad times, we support it.
We support it.
Right.
Nearly two-thirds of all Texans supported it.
All right. Let's go over here, please. Ms. Moorhead.
Do you know everybody's name?
I know Mr. Graham and Ms. Moorhead.
Is it the same group every week? Is it?
It's like the White House press room, right? Where's that? You're the Helen Thomas of this operation.
No.
I don't think we want the question then.
Don't do that.
Don't mention Palestine. Go ahead.
First of all, let me just say I checked with my staff and there is no fiscal note on the smoke-free bill.
You checked with it while you were sitting there? Thank God for Blackberries. Okay,
no
fiscal note on smoke-free.
No fiscal note on the bill. And
check.
Speaking of the bill, though, I know that the bill sponsor in my organization is one of the ones that supports it, but the bill sponsor has personal experience with cancer in her family, and she has personal or some other disease that's related, and you do as well. And I'm just wondering, when you talk to legislators about your initiatives, do you get a real different sense from ones that have a personal experience than from ones that don't? That, I mean, do you get a real willingness to buy into this from people because they have a personal connection with cancer?
Well, but that's, everybody has a personal connection to the disease, either personally, a very close loved one, a neighbor, a coworker, classmate. Everybody in this room, think about it. I mean, you just stop and say, wait, has cancer affected my life in any way? Has it taken anybody? Has it scared anybody? Everyone. That's 100%. When you have a disease that's that pervasive, it touches us all. So you always have some sort of connection. Now, they may be opposed to it for a variety of different reasons, but if you ask that question, they say absolutely.
What are the benefits of having interviewed you before as I remember stuff? And I remember a conversation we had a couple years ago during the Republican primary for president in 08, in which you said that John McCain, who had experience with cancer, was actually a quite good advocate for cancer, right. But you were not very happy with Rudy Giuliani. You talked on camera. A cancer survivor. So it's not necessarily automatically the case that if you have a cancer in your family that you are a great advocate for this. Right. You were actually quite contemptuous of Giuliani, I thought, during that primary.
Well, I don't envy those guys and gals that are in that position. I mean, this is, you're literally, you have to, you're expected to know so much. And if it's the issue of cancer funding, or if it's the issue of education, or war, or terror, or so many other things, every day, every minute of every day, you're being hit up to talk about so many different, I really feel for them. And then it's easy to get stuck. It's easy to get stuck in a position, and you can't go back. Everything's covered now, so they'll always bring back that example of when you took a different position on something.
The YouTubes are something else on that, aren't they?
It's not long until, I mean, now we see people doing incredibly stupid things on the internet via pictures. It's not long until I suspect we watch them doing them live. Scary.
Yeah.
Be careful of it.
That'll be for my kids and your kids to resolve, hopefully, not us. Sir.
Hey, Lance. Thanks again for all you and your organization do. We support what you do and also the smoke-free bill. I wanted to say one thing about CPRIT. Some of the doctors we work with at UT Southwestern, cardiologists Eric Olson and Jay Schneider, just received a grant from CPRIT for children that have had leukemia. Their hearts get weak. And so that CPRIT doesn't also go to cancer, it goes to other drugs, so that other diseases. And just wanted to make that comment, and then I wanted to see if you would support a stem cell institute in Texas or hopefully in Austin.
Would you support stem cell?
We've always, not just myself, but the foundation as well, has always been supportive of that. That is a very, very controversial thing, especially in a state like Texas. Got to be careful there. I've been around, and I should also add, we not only supported it here, but we've supported it in other states like Missouri and other places that have tried to pass these initiatives. I look at that, and you see, I've got a few friends with Parkinson's, and you spend time with them, and you see
how devastating that disease is.
Yep.
I mean, and if you could just, and there's no guarantees here, but if we could give that friend or that person that, that you're speaking about or care about some relief, I just think you, you have to explore that. And I understand it's a very sensitive subject that goes deeper than medicine. It gets into religion. It gets into a lot of different things. And that's unfortunate. Yep. But if we have the potential to affect people's lives and more importantly, affect their quality of life, it's my view we have to move forward there.
We go in the back, come back over here. Yes,
you're playing favorites.
Amanda,
that's Evan's side. This is my
Amanda
side.
Amanda has overruled me. I have no choice. Okay, sir.
Lance, I'm Bill Jimson. I'm the executive director of the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas. And
I'm betting you know each other.
He didn't need to introduce himself, but at least to me.
I actually just wanted to thank you so much for starting CPRIT. You know, we really have had a very successful first year and a half. We've basically been in operations about a year and a half. We've issued 35 funding opportunities. We've received well over 2,000 proposals. Those proposals have been reviewed by peer reviewers who work and live outside of the state of Texas. These peer reviewers picked the best of the best, and they ended up selecting 256 grants all around the state of Texas, totaling $382 million. We invested in 18 companies. We've screened over 12,000 Texans for breast cancer, cervical cancer, colorectal cancer. We've identified hundreds of abnormalities in many cancer cases. About 40% of those individuals screened had never been screened before. And as you said with David Johnson, we've attracted 14 CPRIT scholars in cancer research to the state of Texas. So I really feel like we're well on our way to defeating cancer in Texas, and it really is in large part due to everything you started. And again, we're just sort of carrying it on, and thank you so much for
your
work.
No question.
Right. Lance really started that. Thank you so much, and thank you the other week when you went to the House and helped us with the amendment.
Thank you very much. Let's do questions, please. Sir, back there, and then over here.
Hi, Lance. My name is Michael Choate, and I just want to say thank you so much, and on behalf of everybody that's ever been touched by cancer, thank you. In 2007, my wife and I did a marathon bike ride from Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska, called Texas 4000.
Great.
It's now under the banner of the Livestrong Foundation, and we've talked about the big money deals like CPRIT and whatnot. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about some of the smaller subsidiaries, smaller organizations that work with Livestrong to help promote cancer awareness and research?
What about that?
And we're in that, by the way, we're in that group with you. I mean, even if you can throw around these numbers that Livestrong has raised $400 million and $50 million in a year and et cetera, and sold 75 million yellow wristbands, which equals pretty much $75 million, those are small numbers. And so while we don't feel like we're selling lemonade on the corner or having a bake sale or riding from Austin to Alaska, which by the way is a hell of a long ways, I would know. We're all sort of small when it comes to, if you consider relative to CPRIT or relative to the federal budget, small numbers. But it's also important. And I think the key thing there too is whether you're raising $10, $1,000, $1,000,000.
Yep.
It's the people that are being involved and included in really building that base of support, building that army, if you will. I mean, how many kids did the ride from Austin to Anchorage?
My year it was 40.
40 started. All 40 finished?
I think one guy dropped out. He had some knee problems.
Okay. So there you have you've included 40 young kids into your army. So they're going to leave that experience, and they're going to go for the rest of their lives. They'll never forget that. They'll be committed to this disease, hopefully forever. Right. And so money is one thing. People and passion is a whole other thing. And that's sometimes what we lose here, because people are, quite frankly, they look at this disease and they go, Nixon, 1971, war on cancer, blah, 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 and, you know, everybody...
Didn't we already fix that?
Yeah, what's the problem? I mean, why are we still losing so many people? They become immune to the devastation of this disease. So we need people to share their stories. We need people to be enlisted in this army of support.
Ma'am, maybe do one or two more, and then we'll call it on you, okay? Ma'am?
Yeah, I got to go to work.
Mr. Armstrong.
Me too.
Nanette Quintanilla. I am a cancer survivor, 4 years, and I just want to say thank you. You changed my life in 2007. What you do inspired me to help others. I do tons of volunteer work now. I'm not a public speaker, but I do go and I speak to, I am a nurse, so I do go and I speak to nursing students in nursing schools and let them know the side of being a patient and giving them their dignity as a cancer patient and the things that we go through. Yeah. I read your books to the point I was going through my treatment, and it pulled me through.
Thank you.
I just wanted you to see from the little person.
Yeah, and with all due respect to the doctors that may or may not be in the room, the nurses, I say this all the time, they're the people that that keep it all together. I mean, I tried to be very close friends with my doctors, but I was much closer with my nurses. I realized that they were the ones day in, day out, every hour of every day that were going to be there to care for me and to make sure that everything went the way that it was supposed to. And big fan of the nurses.
In the very back there, and then we'll go here. I think you deserve to have the last word, having been called out. We have a lovely...
I'm afraid, I think we're out of time.
We have a lot... We have a lovely bag of Nicorette gum for you on the way out. Go ahead, sir.
I was wondering, do you think shock ads work for secondhand smoke campaigns?
Shock ads.
Like, for example, I saw one yesterday where a wife was trying to get her husband to quit smoking, and the husband actually, the secondhand smoke killed his wife. Do you think those work?
That is an amazing question. I never had that question. I don't know. We can certainly find out if they work. I mean, these days you can have these control groups where you test certain messages and see if it has an impact on people. They do those with a lot of things. They do them with drinking and driving. They do them with smoking. You know, they had the smoking ad with the Marlboro Man that has now the deal.
Yeah.
The deal here. Yeah. There was a very controversial one a couple of years ago. I think it was made and produced in England, where the little kid is walking around the train station and can't find his parents. I mean, that was a very sensitive one and made people upset. On the other hand, we're talking about it, and again, they must be testing these messages with their core group to know that it has some impact.
Ma'am.
My name is Sierra Trainer.
And so is this the last question?
Yes. My name is Sierra Trainer, and I am a cigarette smoker.
We've established that.
So my question to you is in reference to House Bill 670. Obviously, I feel as a smoker like we've really been ostracized already. It's really hard to turn on the TV and see those hard-hitting commercials. And I understand that people are trying to do something really good for us, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate your efforts as well. My question, I guess, is do you think that this is the best way to go about getting people to quit smoking? Just because it seems like amongst my smoking community, we're a little uneducated on avenues on how to quit smoking. Yeah. Perhaps if we educated, people a little bit more about the alternative ways that we can quit smoking, whether it be over-the-counter or prescription ways, I would really like to see that made more affordable,
no doubt.
Rather than banging us over the head and segregating us from the rest of society. I would really like to see education on how to quit smoking, because the government did make it legal in the first place. So
yeah. You have sympathy for this position.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I completely agree. And if you talk to, for example, Mayor Bloomberg made New York City smoke free, and one of his big things is so people can't smoke in bars or restaurants or the workplace, so they go out front in New York City where everybody walks around. They walk in and out of their buildings. They walk in and out of these places. Everybody does. Nobody drives their car in them, and they walk in. So the smokers are standing outside. And he'll tell you, that is one of the biggest deterrents that we've seen, is that people are almost embarrassed to be standing out there while their friends and coworkers and everybody's walking past, or just people walking down the street looking at them going, what are you doing? Or if you're in the airport and you've got that room. I mean, that's not cool.
But it's a terrarium. The criticism of Mayor, you bring up Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg is also the one who tried to mandate we're going to get rid of trans fats in all restaurants. The reality is that there's a point at which government trying to do good ends up becoming hectoring of people. And as the questioner very correctly says, they have not made smoking illegal yet.
Right.
So at what point does your good work intersect with her ability to, if she chooses to do something that may be bad for her,
right.
She's wondering, when are you going to, you know, can't you just let her be?
Right. And so then it doesn't, we're past this idea of prevention because you're a smoker, you've started smoking. So then you get into this idea of cessation. So how do we help you stop smoking? And I've never smoked, I must confess, at some point in my life I had a cigarette when I was like 12 or something, but it must be a hell of a hard thing to stop. And you can't just stop cold turkey, and you know, maybe Nicorette is cost prohibitive or other things. And I mean, of course there's a zillion potential cures out there, but arguably most of them don't work. So yes, we absolutely have to prevent or help you stop smoking. And so I feel for you, and I wouldn't judge somebody. And I said that in the beginning. I mean, because you smoke a cigarette, you're not Adolf Hitler. To tie those two together again.
And it's economically draining as well. I mean, we're spending money on something that we could spend at local businesses, something that we could contribute. So it's like that $7 a pack is really hitting the economy pretty hard, especially for low income.
Do you smoke a pack a day?
About,
so
yeah.
that's you know, that ends up being
$7 a day,
that's
a
couple thousand dollars, yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's a venti, not a grande.
So I just wanted to educate us on ways to quit. Like, right. I can name a prescription drug right now, but I just don't know.
Yeah, and ironically enough, I mean, while it's not a fact, we know that, or we think that we'll get big support in California by Big Pharma, because they're incentivized to create or invent or have aids for cessation. And so why wouldn't they be your partner? So while on the other side you have big tobacco that literally...
Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, NRG, Christus Health, and BP.